is Helga Djihadi, who has written a book called Helga. It's simply the story about her and her experiences during the Second World War. And she's dropped by this evening as part of her travels around the country to tell us more. To persuade you to buy the book, of course. Which seems like a good idea, Helga. What made you decide you wanted to write about your experiences? Because some of them are very painful memories, aren't they?
I think it was probably my two sons who persuaded me that I ought to write it just for the family. But once I started, it absolutely poured out, and when I finished it, they felt it was so fascinating that I ought to have it published. So we tried bigger publishers, but I'm afraid the book was rather too long for them, and they said I would have to cut it. So gradually we cut it down. By the time we came to about 440 pages, I found a small publisher who was as fascinated as my family and decided to publish it, and well,
here we are.
Here we are, yes.
Did it take you a long time? And how forthcoming were your memories?
It took me over 4 years to write it. And I must say that my memory was very good, because certain things which are rather sad and very frightening, things like that you never forget.
Yeah.
I also had a diary. A very patchy one, because at times I wasn't able to write anything down, but it helped me at least to remember the names and places. Certain dates, I'm afraid, I just have to look up, because during the war, certain battles, you don't remember when it was, but you know there was a battle and what it was like. So I trained myself up by getting some books from the library and doing it like that.
Did you find in reliving, in a sense, by writing your memories, that it was a very cathartic experience? Did it help you work through emotions that perhaps you'd buried a bit over the last few decades?
Yes, I think it did. I was able to talk a little bit more after that. I used to tell my family always about what life was like under Hitler living in Germany, although we were Swiss, a little bit different to any German. When it came to the part when I was a refugee, I always used to stop. And my family used to say to me, well, what happened after that? And I used to just say, look, I don't like to talk about it. And I just pushed it away. But once I started to write, I'm afraid I went through it again. Even to some of the horrors. And I was cold again. I cried again. But I did get it down into writing. And this is really, I think, more the fascinating part about it, because most people are sort of, particularly in England, think about Normandy landings and what happened then. They don't realize what happened to people in the eastern part of Germany, where they had to fight against Russia, because the Russians were not the same. And anybody... only just, well, as soon as you mentioned that the Russians were near, they used to hardly pack up. They just left. But this didn't happen in the West. In Germany, you found that people just stayed there and waited for the English and Americans to arrive. They weren't afraid of them. But I'm afraid we were afraid of the Russians, because...
Yes, there were many horrors, weren't there?
There were a lot of horrors, yes.
Well, we'll
yes.
talk some more about the book after a tune. It's nearly 9:15. You're listening to On the Line on South Coast Radio. We're taking you back in time this evening on South Coast Radio to the Second World War. Helga Djihadi is my guest, and we are looking at the story inside the pages of her recently published book called Helga, which is her story. So there you were, a child in wartime Germany. Even though you were Swiss, you were living in Germany. And suddenly the Nazis were there and taking over the world. As a child, were you very much aware of what was going on, or not really?
I think the first time I realised that I was different was, of course, when Hitler was voted in on the 30th of January. I remember everybody went voting, and of course my father, being Swiss, didn't. It was cold outside, it was snow, and we were making a snowman, when somebody said to me suddenly, you haven't got the little badge called Ja, which means yes. I said, what's that? And my father went voting, and this is what he got, because apparently he only had to say yes or no, ja or nein, if you voted for Hitler or not. And of course I didn't have the badge. So I said, oh, well, I haven't got it, my father doesn't vote, we're Swiss. So the reply was, if you don't vote, you must be a communist. I said, I'm not a communist, because I was always told communists are bad people. Well, we finished up in a fight, I'm afraid. You know, with snowballs.
Who won?
Well, I soon had a few yarp badges from one of the others, you see, and it was my father who had watched us from the window who came and stopped. And he explained that why we were different. And that is the first time when I realized that we were different.
And of course, as things progressed, or went downhill, whichever phrase you want to use, were you very much victimized because you weren't German national?
I think we were once the war started. Until the war, it was all right. But once the war started, being foreigners, it was always assumed that we either had ammunition or secret papers. And of course, my father wasn't in the war. And he was able to drive a car, because most Germans weren't allowed, didn't have a petrol allowance. But my father's business, he had a dairy in Tilsit by the Lithuanian border. He did get the petrol so that he could go and look after his dairy.
You didn't want to leave Germany? Your family didn't want to leave and go to Switzerland?
No, I think we were all very optimistic that eventually the war would be finished and we would be all right, because being so far in the east, you see, the first it started the war against Poland, but then it came France, which was in the west. So that was a long way away from East Prussia. It didn't matter very much to us. But the,
and communication, of course, wasn't what it is now. You often didn't know really what was going on.
No, well, you had a lot of news. We used to get newsreel, and of course, at school, we always had a map on the wall, and any war battles or anything that happened in a war, we used to have to put little flags up.
But of course, that, like it was here, there was a huge element of propaganda in that. You were only told what it was necessary for you to know, really, weren't you?
We were only allowed to listen to German news. Mm. You weren't allowed any foreign news.
I read
all.
Somewhere that the radios that Hitler had produced, you could only tune into German stations. You couldn't tune anything else. You couldn't find anything else on the dial.
Yes, everybody was supposed to have a radio, and if you couldn't afford it, you got what was called Volksradio. You got one supplied free. Mm. And that was only the local station. And of course, that was only the local news. Or if Hitler or Goebbels or Goering made a speech, then that was switched on to this radio.
You met him, didn't you? Mr. Hitler. How did that happen?
Well, that was an accident, actually. I knew he was coming to Königsberg, the town where I lived. And on that particular day, I went and had my piano lesson. And on the way back, I thought, you know, all the crowds of people in the road waiting for Hitler. I wasn't really going to wait for him because I didn't belong to the Hitler Youth. So Hitler Youth used to be standing at the front to keep all the crowds back. I bought some flowers because my father was coming home for the weekend. He used to be away during the week because of his business. And I just couldn't get through the way I wanted to. So I thought, well, if I pushed through people and I got across the road, I could use some of the side roads to get back because the tram wasn't running on that day. So I pushed through and I got onto the road, but I'm afraid it was the wrong moment because Hitler just came around the corner.
And you had flowers in your hand.
And I had flowers in my hand. You're quite right, yes. And they thought I pushed into the road because I wanted to give Hitler some flowers.
And they thought, oh, how sweet.
Yes. And one of the SS men jumped off in the car and came to me and he said, you can come and give the Führer these flowers. So I sort of whispered, you know, they're really for my father.
Oh, dear.
But he didn't take any notice of that, you see. He just sort of pulled me along. And then Hitler looked at me. And I must say, he had very cold blue eyes. There wasn't much warmth in it. It sort of, I don't know, we've had heard so much about him. And I thought, well, he's not a very loving man. And then he looked at me and he said, you're not in uniform. Because the law was, if you're 10 years old, you had to be joining the Hitler Youth. And of course, being Swiss, I didn't. So I was in civilian clothes. And I sort of said, I'm Swiss. I don't think he heard me because people were shouting, Heil Hitler, and screaming, actually. And he took my flowers and he sort of waved. And then the SS man said, you can go, you know. And he sort of pulled me away and pushed me
to the side.
And that was it. And of course, I sort of felt, well, I don't know, admittedly.
You know, they say children are very perceptive, don't they? I mean, I'm sure we spend our lives not giving children enough credit for all sorts of things. But I think children are very good at getting to the heart of people. They are able to look at people and know them, aren't they? Have you noticed that with your own children sometimes?
I wonder if
you just sort of, you know, I know it sounds dramatic to say, you saw the real man, saw into him as a child.
I think I was probably brought up like that. You see, I had a different background because my father was not for Hitler. He tried to prevent me from saying Heil Hitler, which was the ordinary greeting. You didn't just say good morning, good afternoon, or hello, how are you? It was always Heil Hitler, and you lifted your arm up. So my father tried to prevent me from doing that even at school. But I must admit, it was rather difficult. So I dropped that in the end. I did say Heil Hitler because I, as
you
a child...
You wanted to fit in, didn't you?
But yes, I didn't want to be different. I felt also that some of the new teachers who didn't know about that used to say, ah, just a minute, why didn't you say Heil Hitler?
And trouble.
Yes, and all the other children in the class used to shout, oh, she isn't German, she's Swiss, and it made it a bit difficult.
Mm. Well, we'll have some more music and then talk about your flight and what it was like to be a refugee. This is James Last, and it's only 25 past nine on the line on South Coast Radio. So James Last and La Vie en Rose. We've all enjoyed that, haven't we, Helga? It was nice.
Yes, we have.
Humming along to what we were. Helga Djihadi is my guest, talking about her first book. She's busy writing her second one at the moment, called Helga, and it's a true story of a woman's flight as a refugee and how she was reunited with her family. But more than that, it's a story of growing up in Germany under Hitler. Well, tell us about the flight. Tell us about how you became a refugee, because there you were living in Germany under Hitler, but you were all surviving and things were okay, I guess, weren't they?
Yes, until the moment when the Germans started to lose the war, so to speak. And being in the East, we had the Russians who gradually came nearer and nearer. I had to stop my medical studies because the university was bombed out by then. And all we had to do was look after the wounded who came back from the Eastern Front. And I'm afraid they were not treated very well because facilities just did not exist. We had cattle trucks arriving with wounded, very severely hurt. And we only had paper bandages. It was just a matter of getting the necessary things done and sending them off to the West, unless... it was just impossible to transport them any further. Well, we started to get warned by these wounded soldiers that the Russians were actually nearer than we heard on the news, because, of course, you never really got the truth to hear. Hitler was not going to lose the war. So when I realized what was happening, I decided it was time to leave. And at that particular moment, I'm afraid our whole family was scattered. Everybody seemed to be somewhere else. So I started off on my own. I always remember when I left my home or my house, which was already half bombed out, I locked the door and I even put the key in the back in a hiding place where we've always had it, because I thought, you know, I was convinced we would come back. It was 50 below zero. It was very, very cold. I was dressed very warm. I had a sleigh and a rucksack and a little satchel where I had some money in it. I was clever enough to pack a few bottles of brandy in it and cigarettes, because I knew that was black market stuff and I might be able to exchange it for something else. And I just started to walk.
Where to?
Towards the West. Well, you soon found other people doing the same thing, so you joined a trek. And I think the nights were the worst, because you had no houses or farms, because if they still existed, people wouldn't let you in because they were afraid you might stay. But they soon had to leave too. The worst part, I think, was crossing what we called the Huff, which is, you can describe it as a big lake with an opening toward the Baltic, which was frozen. And that was the only way we could get out, because going any further on land would have meant meeting the Russians, because they had gradually started to encircle us. Now, the Russians knew that these were refugees crossing the part of the Huff, but they still shot at us. And, of course, if the ice breaks, you break in. We had refugee carts with people in there, just breaking in, and the horses disappeared. People used to shout and scream, but you could not help them, because if you tried, you could not go towards the edge. You would break into and die. I think that was the worst bit. Then the next thing was, of course, they didn't have any food. once we got to the other side of the ice, there's a very small piece of land. It's called the Nering, which divides the Hough and the Baltic. And we had to walk along there, and nothing really grows on there. When you haven't food, you try and steal it at night from one of the other carts. But if you can't do that, we finished up eating the bark of the tree.
How long did this journey take you, Helga?
Well, I started off at the beginning of January, and it was about 2 months before I finished. I had all sorts of experiences, of course, in the meantime, because we passed some of the parts where the Russians had been, and their cruelty is described in my book, but I can't talk about it.
What kept you going? Just a desire to live?
Yes, I didn't want to die. I just didn't want to die. People used to drop by the side because they couldn't walk any further, and they just died. But we used to see the bodies all twisted from the frost, frozen, and I think that part encouraged me, because I thought, no, this is not going to be me. I was much too young. I was only 20 years old, and that wasn't going to be me. I wanted to get further than that.
You reached safety. Where did you reach safety?
Yes. I got to a town called Greifswald, where we had some friends, actually, the parents of a boyfriend of mine, and I absolutely collapsed when I got there, and I finished up in hospital, and I was ill for a long time, because by then I was not only starved and had frostbites, but I had pneumonia, pleurisy, and even when they tried to feed me, I could not keep any food down because I wasn't used to any food. But I did survive, and I found my mother there, because she had made her own way to these friends of ours. Mm. So this was the first person I found for my family.
Did you ever go back to your childhood home, or did you then start a new life at the end of the war?
No, we couldn't go back at the end of the war, because, you see, that part was Russian, and it's still Russian even today. So
I wonder what happened to the key in the house, eh?
Well, I suppose somebody broke into the door and occupied it now. And I think I've heard you can go back to Königsberg now. And
will you go back?
No, I won't. I don't want to go back, because I like to remember the way it was. I have heard from one or two people who have been back what it looks like, and it's terrible. And I don't want to see that. No. That's a part I don't want to know. That was my childhood, and that was a happy time. No, I don't want that again. I don't want to see it again.
And of course, you were finally, your family were reunited, and you went to live in Switzerland. And
yes.
Of course, the next book takes up where this one leaves off. I've always had a sneak preview, but I won't mention it on air, what happens. But of course, I can rest to say you're here with your husband this evening, who happened to be on holiday in Switzerland, and the rest, as they say, is history. Helga, thank you very much for coming and sharing some of your memories with us this evening on South Coast Radio. I hope the book does really well.
Yes, thank you.
And if you'd like to get a copy of Helga's book, it's simply called Helga, and it's by Helga Gerhardi, and her surname is spelt Gerhardi. Now, it's currently in Dillon's in Southampton and in Smith's in Portsmouth in Southampton. Shortly to be appearing in bookshops too in Sussex, but if you would like a publisher's details, I'll give them to you in just a moment.